Are you honest in all you do? Do you have integrity? In my case, I'd like to think I am. The reality is, I'm soft around the edges. I hold back the truth a bit here and a little bit there. I justify that I'm doing so because I have my eye on the bigger picture. And if I cheat a little here and a little there, I can justify my decisions in the belief that I know where to draw the line. Small things, unfortunately, lead to bigger things, and they shift because what was unacceptable yesterday is today's norm. It's like my beard. It started off as me not shaving for a few days. Then after a little while and somewhere along the line, it will become a beard. I won't be able to define that moment because it comes about due to the accumulated aggregation of change. The same is true of lying and cheating. In communities where you know your neighbors and the store owners you buy from, in places where you know your employers or employees' families, where you know who your boss is and they know who you are, the impact of dishonesty affects you more directly. However, as we grow into a global, international chain store online marketplace, buyers and sellers don't know each other. Bosses and employees don't know each other. They live in different countries. And that in turn makes it easier to turn a blind eye to transgressions. Rob Chestnut has spent his career in pursuit of telling the truth, first as a U.S. federal prosecutor, and then as the ethics lead at major online organizations in the sharing economy. Chestnut, in his new book, Intentional Integrity, asks and answers questions like, are these platforms enabling new, flexible ways of working that unlock human potential? Or are they just enabling large companies to exploit gig workers by avoiding employment laws? I invited Rob Chestnut, the author of Intentional Integrity, to join me for a conversation that matters about integrity, what it is, the challenges a life of integrity places on each of us, and why it's vitally important that we demand it of others and of ourselves.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Rob Chestnut, welcome to Conversations That Matter. You and I have had a conversation in the past that really resonated with me, and now we have an opportunity to talk about your new book, Intentional Integrity. I have to ask the question, how do we know exactly when somebody is being honest, when they have integrity? How do we, as somebody that's interacting with somebody, recognize that? Because I think that then informs the way that we move forward in all of our relations with those people and those organizations.
That's a great question. Yeah, I was actually talking to Carlos Santana about that. And Carlos Santana, in his way, told me that when you're in the presence of someone that has integrity, you can feel it. And I can't put it better than that. There's not a particular cue that you can rely on to tell if someone's lying. But I think you can feel when you're in the presence of someone who's authentic and who is being straight with you and direct.
So those people demonstrated a tremendous amount of courage and conviction in their beliefs. And at the heart of that, I think is a really challenging thing. How do you remain true to your values, especially in a world that is saying, well, come on, you can fudge it a little bit here, or you can push it a little bit there, or maybe you can go even further. But you're being asked and you're being told or put in situations where you have to say no, you're crossing the line. And so this is very difficult for people to do.
It is, Stu. I think a key to it is being intentional. And by what I mean by that is you need to think in advance about the kind of situation that you might be in and make a commitment to yourself in advance about how you're going to respond in that situation. You know, it's too often things happen very quickly and you are immediately put in this situation you don't have a whole lot of time to really think and reflect about who you want to be, what you want to stand for. I talk to people at different companies about alcohol, for example. You are inevitably going to be put in situations in the workplace where people are going to start drinking. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. What's your line? And too often, people think about how much they are going to drink in a work setting while they're drinking in a work setting. And when you do that, you don't really get a chance to reflect carefully on what are the various implications of what I'm doing. How might this not be such a great idea? So I encourage everybody on that one issue, for example, know yourself and come up with a rule. I've had a lifelong rule with alcohol. I'm never going to have more than two drinks in any work setting, no matter what. So I don't even have to think about it or question it in the moment because I've thought through this in advance so much. And I'm very intentional about it. It's a lot easier when you think about potential ethical dilemmas in advance. Make a commitment to yourself about how you want to respond, because then when the moment happens, you're ready for it.
In your book, of course, you're dealing an awful lot with elements related to the workplace and what it means to have integrity in that environment. Where do our values around that come from, especially when we're in a transnational world, where we're in global, international marketplaces, and we can be working for the same company, but it's very easy for somebody who represents us in Southeast Asia versus Russia or Europe or, in any other location around the world that may play a role in these companies. They have a different set of values. So how do those values get established and that you ensure that everybody sees situations, let's say, like alcohol, the same way?
Sure. This comes up all the time because ethics, sometimes it's clear, right, Stu? And sometimes it's lying, cheating, and stealing. And, we can all agree that that's the sort of thing that's out of bounds. We're not going to act that way. You can be very clear about it. Other things aren't so clear. One thing we talked about, for example, is hugging. Can you hug somebody anymore at work, right? You ask that question in Europe, people looked at me like, oh, Rob, are you kidding me? We give everybody a little hug and a peck on the cheek whenever we see them at work. You ask that same question in another part of the world, and they look at me like I'm crazy again because, what do you mean? We don't touch each other. So how do you have a global company that can have a common set of norms and rules around this sort of thing? So, one thing I think about is, first of all, the message has got to come from the top about what type of company you want to be. If you want to set a course for a workplace where everyone feels like they belong, or you want to set a course for a company that's going to act ethically, you need a tone from the top that this is important to us. People need to hear it from the top. But I also think you need to get together as a group in a company and talk about these things and work through them. And what I mean by that is, in some companies, one person goes off like Moses to the mountaintop and they come back with the stone tablets. Here are our rules. Live by them. I don't think that's a very compelling approach because we're all different. We all come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different life experiences. So I like to encourage people to put together a group of 15 people, get some folks from different parts of the world, different cultures, and talk about some of these issues and come to a common understanding. Like on the hugging issue, we agreed that our rule is touching is an act of consent. And if you're going to touch somebody, you have to be, it's on you to make sure that the person you're touching is good with it. Mm. You can't assume. So that is a rule that can cross different global boundaries and norms, and everyone can respect that. But it gets people thinking about the fact that you need to respect the other person and their desire to be touched in a certain situation. In order to understand it, though, no one person has all the answers. You need to sit in a room and listen to different perspectives. And I think come to a common group understanding that is consistent with the North Star or the purpose of the company where you work. Different companies may have different philosophies because they're out to accomplish different things.
Okay. Somebody's listening to you right now going, hang on a second, Rob, you're talking about a tremendous amount of work. We're in the business of selling this or making that or trading in these kinds of, you know, assets and so on. You're asking me to put in an extraordinary amount of work. How do I justify the value of doing that work, knowing that it's going to take away from what I consider to be my core business?
Right. I think you have to go through a mind shift in a couple of ways. You know, first of all, committing to a path of integrity doesn't cost money. It doesn't really cost that much money. It does take some mind share. It does take some time. But you're going to spend time on integrity no matter what. You can choose what kind of time it's going to be, right? You can take some time proactively up front to be intentional about the type of company you want to be and set a tone. Or you can do nothing, and then you're going to end up having problems on the back end because these issues are going to come up. Problems are going to come up, romantic relationships, alcohol, you know, the sort of impact your company has on the environment is going to come to the world's attention. You know, the world now, is we are so closely connected. Everyone sees what everyone else is doing. You know, in the past, you could run in your own lane a little bit. Even if something bad happened, it would get swept under the rug. You know, no more. Integrity used to be what you're doing the right thing when no one was watching. Today, everybody's watching everything. So you have to understand you're going to put time into integrity. You're going to be, I think, a lot more efficient if you put it in up front and think about it. And I think, you know, what a lot of business leaders of the past, and I call them 20th century thinking, they're focused on one thing. They're focused on making money. You know, shareholder value. Shareholder value is terrific, right? But unfortunately, if that's all you're focused on, there are a number of collateral consequences to a lot of important stakeholders. The world's tired of that. The world wants companies to step up and think bigger and do things not just to make money, but do things to have a positive impact in the world. And if you don't, your employees are going to step up and they're going to push you. They're going to blog about it. They're going to tweet about it. They're going to walk out. Your customers are going to speak up, right? Your customers are going to say, you know what? I don't want to do business with a company that acts like that. Companies that are perceived to have values, that are perceived to be acting with integrity, actually outperform the market, outperform their competitors. So if you really want to do business well and you want to be successful in business, you have to understand that integrity is a key part of that. And focusing on that is just smart business.
What are the core components of a corporate integrity platform or structure that somebody could say, okay, how do I ensure that I'm meeting all of those benchmarks that you've just outlined?
Well, it's going to look different depending on size of your company, what type of business you're in. But a few things I think are important. Number one, message at the top. I like to say that a CEO is a thermostat for integrity. You know, not a thermometer. Like a thermometer takes the temperature in the room. The thermostat sets the temperature. So a leader at a company is taking that thermostat dial and they're setting it on a particular way that the company is going to do business. Is it going to be the kind of company that is focused on hitting a sales number no matter what? Getting big no matter what. That may mean cutting a few ethical corners, pushing some boundaries, maybe even dealing with or turning the other blind eye if an employee who's a very good salesperson is misbehaving. Or, you know, are you going to be a company that believes that acting with integrity will, over the long run, drive your business and be something you're proud of because you're doing good in the world? So I think number one is, where do the leaders stand? Because if your leader doesn't stand for it, then nothing else matters. Your HR department can be as well-meaning as the best of them, but without that buy-in at the very top, you're lost. Another element, I think, is that code of ethics. Mm-hmm. The idea that you've got a code of ethics that's not downloaded off the internet. You know, the irony, Stuart, is like so many companies are downloading somebody else's code of ethics off the internet and stealing it. They're putting their own name at the top and email it out, check the box. That check the box mentality is something that employees, they know it, they feel it, and they're bored with it. They just want to check the box and move on. I believe that if you want to run a company that has integrity, it needs to have a little heart. Needs to have a little authenticity. Leaders have to be willing to actually talk about it every now and then and remind people about this is the way we want to do things. So I think commitment from the top and a willingness to have an authentic conversation, not a check the box, those are two critical elements.
So as you're saying this, I realize that what becomes important and to demonstrate that you truly do embrace and live these values is in small decisions frequently that demonstrate, well, you know, where is your true value? And so there, all of those decisions can be significant, even though they may seem small.
I'll tell you a story, a small thing. I'm standing at my desk. We have an area, open desking, right? Lots of people in the room, everybody's sitting or standing at a desk. So I'm standing at my desk. A mid-level IT person comes over to me, introduces himself, and says, "Rob, I noticed that when you left your desk a little while ago, you didn't lock your computer screen. You left the screen open." And I thought for a minute. And, you know, your first reaction in a situation like that is defensiveness, right? Look, I just went to the restroom for a couple of minutes. You know, we're in a secure building. You know, no reporter's going to go walking by my desk, right? But I thought for a second, what kind of courage did it take for a mid-level IT person to come walking over to a senior executive of the company and call them out for a security violation, right? And I thought, wow, this is pretty powerful. So I thanked him. I said he was right, and he was. And he was great about it. He showed me a way that I could set my computer up so that with one click of a button, I could immediately lock the screen when I walked away. And I thanked him. And then I thought about it some more. We had this little award that we give out. There are these Yeti water bottles. We call them Integra Yeti, right? And if somebody has the courage to raise an uncomfortable question or ask an ethical issue, it's something that the ethics group at Airbnb will give these out to people. And we try to do it in a group setting. So the next time we were in a group setting, I stood up and I told the story about my own security violation and what this guy had done. And I gave him an Integra Yeti in front of the whole group. Several hundred people applauded, loud applause. 2 years later, he sends me an email. And at the top of the email is vulnerability alert. He writes me a one-page email about how that moment was his proudest moment in 6 years of working. Right? So for a $30 water bottle and for a moment of self-awareness, I sent a message to several hundred people in that room that the courage to raise a question, the courage to speak truth in the face of power, as someone once phrased it to me, was the way that we want to do business. A little thing like that can send such a message to a large group of people. That's what you want to do.
Okay. The consequences of stepping forward like that for that person could be that you would berate them or brush off their concern or whatever. You chose to help to use that as a moment to demonstrate your commitment to building an ethical community. What happens for somebody who has that in that same kind of mid-level range and they realize that the company itself is unethical and that they feel compelled to raise awareness around this, knowing that they very well may do so at their own peril? I'm thinking about whistleblowers. These are people who step up to the plate and really take big, big career and personal chances.
I have been so fortunate in my life that I've never been in that situation. I feel for people in that situation, Stu. I really do, because, you know, I would want everybody to have a wonderful, successful career. And I can certainly understand someone in a situation like that pausing, because it's a powerful moment. I think the one of the best things that we can do is support people who have that courage. Susan Fowler, I talk about Susan Fowler all the time. Susan Fowler was the employee at Uber whose blog post blew that company up. And good for her. That showed a tremendous act of courage. If Susan Fowler's resume ever came across my desk, I would say, this is the kind of person I want. I want somebody who's not afraid to speak up the truth in the face of power, because that's the kind of environment that I want.
Right.
I hope we have more leaders that would say, I want someone who's demonstrated that in the face of a tough decision, they stood up at personal career risk and did the right thing. Those are the sorts of people we ought to be fighting over in the workplace to get, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think, going back to your earlier point about the fact that if you choose not to pay attention to ethics at the highest possible level, those people with integrity aren't going to stay with you anyways. They may not come forward and blow the whistle, but they're not going to hang around either. Thank you very much for taking the time to join me for this conversation.
Thanks for having us.